Would you call the next case, please?
Our second case today, 822-0970, Gene Stengel versus Casey's Retail Company, doing business as Casey's General Stores Incorporated.
And as you can see, we have three microphones from which you could talk, either the microphone right next to your council table or the one in the middle, and the one in the middle goes up and down. It's your choice. When you begin your argument, please state your name for the record, and you'll each have 15 minutes with 5 minutes for rebuttal. You ready to begin?
Good morning, Your Honors. Counsel, may it please the court. My name is Jenny Olson, and I represent Gene Stengel. Mr. Stengel asked this court to reverse the district court's grant of summary judgment, finding that as a matter of law, Casey's did not have notice of the dangerous condition of snow and ice in its parking lot, which caused Mr. Stengel to fall. Minnesota law requires that property owners keep their property reasonably safe, and if they do an inspection, which they're required to under the law, that reveals dangerous conditions, they need to treat those or provide a proper warning.
So do you contend, I mean, this is a slip in the winter case, so, right? We have these all the time. Do you contend that that duty amounts to a requirement that property owners, landowners, keep their premises completely free of snow?
No, Your Honor, that would be inconsistent with the law. What the question is if the landowner has notice of a potentially dangerous condition and if they have the reasonable amount of time to remedy that, and juries decide whether that duty is exercised reasonably. So, for example...
But duty is generally an issue for the court to decide in the first instance, and whether there's a breach of that duty is for the jury.
Correct.
Typically. Okay.
And that was what I was trying to get at, maybe inartfully, was that the evidence in this case from the Casey's employees was that Casey's had made a decision not to use salt and sand with its plows, that a winter storm occurred, and that Casey's, through its employees, knew the plow would leave salt, unsalted and untreated snow and ice in their parking lot. Casey's chose to do nothing to inspect it, and on the morning Mr. Stengel fell, it was visible from inside Casey's where the employees stand, and Ms. Motzko had actually walked in to the store that morning at 6 o'clock, said she saw conditions that were snowy that she knew could mean there was ice, and did nothing because Casey's did not train their employees to inspect or treat dangerous conditions. That establishes the duty. Casey's argument about whether it was reasonable...
What establishes the duty? That they had decided they weren't going to sand and salt? That seems to be a breach. Isn't the duty the question about whether there's constructive notice that this that the compacted snow is a dangerous condition? And what about the evidence suggests that Casey's had that constructive notice?
Yeah, so I agree with the court that the question is about notice. But, for example, there is a case that we cited. It's the Scott versus Village of Olivia case. In that case, the property owner had knowledge that there was a faucet or spout that was leaking water for 13 years beforehand. And so the court found that that knowledge that the spout could create the dangerous condition before the day of the fall was enough notice to get to the question of whether it was reasonable how they responded to that harm. And what we're saying here is that the knowledge of the snowstorm, the knowledge that the plow compacts snow and does not treat ice, is notice of the dangerous condition.
So, counsel, it seems to me the crucial question is whether the condition was present for such a period of time so as to constitute constructive notice of the hazard. And the district court found that there wasn't sufficient time, I think. What evidence is there in that you would point to suggest that the condition was present for such a period of time, a sufficient period of time, so as to constitute constructive notice?
So Ms. Motzko, the employee at Casey's, testified her shift started at 6 o'clock in the morning. that when she came to work, she saw that the plow had been through. And remember, she has this prior knowledge that the plow leaves snow and ice in the parking lot. She saw snow in the parking lot and testified she knew that meant there could also be ice. She said she did not go and inspect or treat the dangerous condition because she was not trained to do so. So that's at 6 o'clock in the morning.
And appellant fell at approximately 7 a.m. on the video.
Correct, 7:01. And
so that's an hour.
Yes, and both employees, I apologize for jumping in. It's been a while since I've been here. Both employees testified that they had plenty of time and the capability, nothing stopping them during that hour from going out and inspecting and treating the snow and ice. And importantly, the duty here is regarding a highly trafficked area that Casey's has knowledge is going to be used by customers. So Casey's has knowledge of snow and ice left in this area where Mr. Stengel fell. They know it's highly trafficked. They have an hour.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but where's the evidence that they knew there was ice? I get the testimony from Moscow. I'm looking at it right now. I mean, she says, yes, compacted snow. I know it can be slippery. But where's the evidence that there was constructive notice that it was actually icy?
So when a property owner does not conduct inspections, they're not going to have notice of the ice, and the law does not favor a company saying, we're not going to do inspections to find the ice, and then we're going to come in and claim no notice.
Well, that's where kind of constructive notice comes in, right? I mean, that's the whole notion of if you would have done your inspection, you would have noticed it, so we're going to, we're going to give you or impose this constructive notice. But I think as Judge Cochran indicated, I mean, the case law talks about an adequate amount of time. Plus, there's got to be some evidence, doesn't there, of the condition itself. And here we have general knowledge that there's still, despite the plow coming through four times in the last 24 hours, there's still compacted snow on the sidewalk and on the pavement by the gas pumps. So we have that. We have the evidence from Motzko, as I understand it, that she knows, from living in Minnesota probably, that compacted snow can be slippery. And then we have your client's testimony that he thought that conditions changed during the 10, 11 minutes that he was in the store. So what is the actual evidence that would say they knew there's constructive notice that it was actually icy or slippery?
I would like to address separately my client's statement because I don't believe he said it changed. But in terms of the constructive notice, what is meant by constructive notice is if you look out into a parking lot and you see conditions that are sufficient to create icy and dangerous conditions, in all of the cases where a landowner is relieved of their obligation under the duty prong, we can look at the banana peel cases, we can look at the case where someone slipped on an object. The property owner had went in the gum case, the property owner had done an inspection and did not reveal the dangerous condition. And so the court found, based on that, there is not constructive notice of the dangerous condition. Here, when the employees can look out or see when they're walking in, a parking lot covered with snow that they have prior knowledge can be compacted with snow and ice, that is the notice that triggers the inspection, and they're only relieved of that duty if the inspection did not reveal the dangerous condition.
But isn't there case law that suggests that 30 minutes isn't enough time to charge someone with constructive notice or constructive knowledge? So why is an hour enough, but 30 minutes legally isn't enough? In other words, when does something become constructive notice become a fact question versus a legal question? Where is that line?
So first, the difference in the two cases is when the question about constructive notice comes up in those 30-minute cases, nobody had any prior indication that danger was there. What they're saying is what we can show is it was there for 30 minutes. Is that enough time that a reasonable property owner should have come and found the dangerous condition? In this case, the property owner knows of the dangerous condition. They see it when they're walking into work. They see it from standing at the cashier's that there's snow and ice in the parking lot.
Well, so, is there testimony that there's ice or just snow? I'm not sure I saw testimony about ice or recall testimony about ice, but correct me if I'm wrong.
I can pull up some specific sites on rebuttal, but I believe they all testified that what happens is the plow compacts snow and makes it either ice or like ice in that the snow is now compacted. So they knew that was happening when the plow came through.
But they didn't testify that they actually saw ice, correct?
I believe that what they said is they saw snow, which they understood meant that there could be ice in the parking lot. That's Ms. Modsko. So I think that in that instance where you have the property owner with the knowledge that there's snow and potentially ice, which they know is dangerous and can cause injuries to customers, that triggers the duty to do an inspection, which is a separate question from the reasonable amount of time. The second issue is there's a real fact dispute as to the amount of time. Casey's claims 30 minutes, but we've presented evidence through Ms. Motzko, their own employee, who said she came at 6 o'clock and the plow had already been through. That's an hour, and that's a jury question.
Right, and that, I guess that's my question for you. Why does that become a jury question when 30 minutes arguably is not?
Because in this case, the testimony of the employees said that they were capable, able, and had the tools to treat the dangerous condition within that hour and just simply chose not to.
Doesn't that go to breach? I'm still really struggling with what's the breach question here. Not having a policy to have sand and de-icing stuff is the breach, I guess. But we still have to have this duty. And I'm not sure I've, in my mind, buttoned that up. I mean, I'm looking at the testimony. Listening to you tell me there's no duty to keep a parking lot and sidewalk absolutely free of snow. So you told me that, you told us that at the beginning of the argument. And we have something more than that here. We have compacted snow that people say we know can be slippery. So I think your argument is that's enough to create the duty, the knowledge that there is snow that's been compacted and that there's no dispute that they knew that for an hour and that that's enough.
Correct.
Okay.
And my question was more, or my answer was more going to the 30 minutes question. When we're answering whether 30 minutes or an hour is enough to create actual notice as a matter of law, we do have to look at the underlying fact issues of when they found out about it and what they decided to do. And if Casey's own employees is saying that either 30 minutes or 1 hour was not prohibitive to inspect or treat, I don't think we should be relying on the case law that says 30 minutes is not enough to create notice, because we have all this other evidence of notice in the form of what they actually saw and what they knew that morning that gave them notice there could be ice in the parking lot.
What if he had come in 15 minutes after the plow had plowed the lot and fell at that point? Would that still be a fact question?
I can't promise you I wouldn't be here arguing the same case. And the reason is because what's really unique about this case is the prior knowledge that this way that they're choosing to plow to save money on damage to their asphalt and their concrete is creating the dangerous condition. And in our case law, what we've said is actually actual or constructive knowledge is not really the question when the property owner's own decisions and actions either create or increase the risk. And so I don't know that I would say in this exact case, if there was 15 minutes, if that would be Casey's summary judgment as a matter of law, because I think plaintiff would still have an argument that Casey's is contributing to the danger by the decision they're making to plow, compact snow, create ice, without doing anything to have inspections or remedy the snow and ice.
Don't they still have to have knowledge, though, of the condition?
I think there's unquestionably evidence in this record that they have knowledge of the dangerous condition in their parking lot, and that goes to the case of the Le Sueur case that I was talking about earlier. If you have knowledge that a condition is going to occur or reoccur, like having a water spout, you don't get to then come into court and say, well, I didn't know of the precise piece of ice that water spout created, because you have knowledge that there's going to be a dangerous condition.
But that's an artificial condition that the landlord created, right? I mean, here we have 15 inches of snow in April. I mean, that's just a unique set of circumstances, isn't it? I mean, you're going to have freeze-thaw cycles in an April snowstorm, aren't you?
Yes, but the compacted snow was an artificial condition as well. That's not how it was present on the property from the storm. That was a decision Casey's made to send out its plows. It's also
by trying to remove snow, they created the hazard.
By trying to remove snow without using the means to remove ice and compacted snow, they concealed the potential hazard from the public by making it look like their lot was plowed, and then they failed to do anything to treat the ice that they knew could be remaining and likely was after the plow came through.
So my question for you is, for them to avoid liability, should they have gone out after it was plowed, inspected for ice, if they saw ice, put down sand?
Yes, and that's exactly what the Casey's corporate representatives agreed was reasonable. After the plow came, they said that does provide notice, and so it would be, the Casey's employees should be going out to inspect, and if they see dangerous conditions.
So one-time inspection would have taken care of it?
Absolutely, because if an inspection didn't reveal a dangerous condition, then we would be in the line of cases like Wren or Red Owl or these other cases where property owners are actually conducting inspections and can say, hey, this is speculative because we were just here an hour ago and it wasn't there. Because they chose not to do that and they chose not to treat dangerous conditions, they do not get to claim that they didn't have notice when they were fully aware of the storm and that there was snow and potentially icy conditions in their lot.
And you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Your Honors. And may it please the court. My name is Inga Kingland. I'm here on behalf of Casey's Retail Company. It's very clear after hearing appellant's argument that the judges are well aware of what the standard is. This is a case about existence of a duty. This isn't a case about fulfillment of a duty. It's not a case about whether Casey's acted reasonably in treating a condition it knew about. This is about whether Casey's knew of the condition on its property, which Mr. Stengel, the appellant, says he fell on and caused him damage. And I want to address that right away, what that condition is. If you look at the complaint, Mr. Stengel's complaint says he fell on ice. It doesn't say he fell on snow. If you look at his statement given 10 days after the accident, it says he fell on ice. He didn't fall on snow. If you look at his answers to discovery and his deposition testimony, he fell on ice. He did not fall on snow. And there is no evidence in the record from any Casey's employee that they were aware of ice or icy conditions on the property.
Well, they did. As I understand Ms. Motzko's testimony, she agreed that snow can be slippery and also that the slipperiness of compacted snow can be a hazard for customers, and that in this particularly highly traveled area, which I understand that the appellant parked outside of, I mean, was not parked at a gas pump, but was next to the store, as I understand it, in a parking space.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So, I mean, talk about a highly traveled part of the property. Why does it matter that they didn't testify they knew there was ice when, in fact, they testified they understand compacted snow can be slippery?
Sure, Your Honor. And this goes back to what the longstanding precedent in Minnesota is for premises liability and constructive notice. So in order for a duty to attach, which is obviously a precedent to finding liability for a premises owner, they need to have created the condition, known of the condition, or there must have been sufficient amount of time passed from the existence, the creation of a condition, to for constructive knowledge to attach of that dangerous condition. When we're talking about the difference between snow and ice, we're talking about two different conditions. And that's, I think, one of the key distinctions in this case that's being blurred by appellant and amicus parties. And the distinction, the inference that appellant wants to draw is that because there was snow, there's a presumption of ice, and we should know about the ice automatically. And that's
Isn't there testimony, though, that by appellant through his experience as a plow driver that snow can turn to ice quickly?
There is, but if you look at the direct testimony about what was happening on this day from appellant himself, he says that from his experience plowing that same day, commercial plowing that morning for 3+ hours, what was happening was the snow, when it was plowed, it was a crystallized snow sheared off by the plow. And then after a certain amount of time, and he doesn't specify how long that is, it turns to ice. He says that when he got out of his car, his truck, his plow truck at Casey's, and stepped onto the parking lot, It was crystallized snow. It was not ice. It was not slippery. On that condition, he did not see any ice. He did not see any slippery conditions. He did not feel any ice or feel any slippery conditions when he's walking into Casey's. 11 minutes later, he walks out, and his testimony is that the conditions have changed.
Didn't he take a different route out?
He testified to that.
He did testify that.
You have to look at the evidence in the light most favorable.
He did, but he also didn't say.
Party.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor, I think what's critical, yes, and I want to directly address that he did say that he took a different route out of the store. He used the same door. He walked down the same sidewalk, and then he stepped onto the parking lot surface to go to his car. So we're talking about, it's pure speculation, how many feet different that path was. He's talking about going from his car to the store, from the store to the car.
He didn't go through a different door. But he still said it was different, and we have to accept that.
I think you also...
For purposes of analyzing, you know, the case before us.
Yes, Your Honor, you do have to view this through a summary judgment lens, but we're talking about the difference between metaphysical doubt and we're talking about his direct testimony about what he saw and felt in the parking lot. And that,
well, but I think the testimony is his car was 6 to 10 feet from the door, and when you see him leave on that video, it looks like he falls right near the door. Like he exits the door, goes on the sidewalk for a little bit, and then he's down. So he's not right next to his car when he's falling. And we don't know exactly where he got on the sidewalk when he entered the store, but there's a distance there.
Sure. And I think, Your Honor, it really goes right back to whether Casey's had knowledge of any icy or slippery condition.
Let's talk about that because timing is an issue when we're looking at the legal framework for this. You want us just to look at the 11 minutes that he was in the store. His attorney wants us to look at the time that the snowplow went through, which was pre-5 a.m. or 6. I'm getting at least an hour earlier.
Well, and I don't necessarily agree with that, Your Honor.
Tell me why they're wrong.
Sure. So the record is that Mr. Soiny's plow company had been there four times before, over the duration of this massive snow event, 15-inch deluge, and the following morning, which is when Mr. Stengel fell. So the evidence in Ms. Canazzi, the assistant manager's statement shortly after the accident itself, is that the plow had been there half an hour before the fall occurred. Ms. Motzko, who arrived at Casey's at 6 a.m., says that the lot looked like it had been plowed. They didn't have 15 inches of snow on it, but it doesn't mean that the plow didn't come when Ms. Canazzi says it came half an hour before the fall. So I don't necessarily agree that we're talking about 11 minutes versus 1 hour. We're talking about 11 minutes, half an hour, when the snowplow was there.
Isn't that a fact question, then?
I don't think it's a genuine issue of material fact. I think it doesn't say anything about what Casey's knew about the actual condition of the property. There's no evidence that Casey's knew that there was ice on the property. There's not actually any evidence in the record that they knew that there actually was compacted snow on the property. There's an inference that appellant tries to make, which I think is attenuated and flawed, presuming the existence of ice. And that, under Minnesota law, is not sufficient to survive summary judgment.
Can you go back to what you just said? You don't about the snow piece of it and your argument on the record there?
That there's a knowledge of snow at the property?
Yes. What do you think the record reflects regarding the knowledge of snow in the parking lot?
I think it's very clear that there was a blizzard. I think that's abundantly clear in the evidence, in the record. I think that that Casey's knew that there was snow in the parking lot. I think that's the extent of the knowledge that the record demonstrates.
And that it had been left behind after the snow plow had been there an hour earlier. If we're going to look at the summary judgment standard, don't we have to look at it as being an hour?
Yes, that they knew that there was snow in the parking lot after the plow had been there.
And then there's testimony about plows can leave compacted snow that can be slippery, correct? Ms. Motzko, as I'm looking at her testimony, I think she agreed.
Yes, I agree with you. They know of a potential for a potentially dangerous condition, but that under Minnesota law is not sufficient to meet the constructive knowledge standard.
So why isn't it a fact question here as to whether there was a sufficient period of time for them to become aware of the icy condition?
And I want you to answer that in, no one really dealt with the recent Supreme Court jurisprudence on tort law. And it seems that the Supreme Court wants trials on these issues. And so answer Judge Cochran's question in light of recent Supreme Court precedent.
Okay.
Minnesota Supreme Court.
Yes, ma'am. There, I think what's critical here is that there is direct evidence in the record from appellant himself as to the condition of the parking lot, not just the area where he stepped, but the parking lot that he saw and was able to view when he was walking into the store. I think that is a key distinction here, is that there's direct evidence from 11 minutes before his fall that he did not, there's no icy condition. It is crystallized snow. It's snow, not ice. Doesn't say that it's icy, doesn't say it's slippery. I think that's a critical distinction here. If we were left with
But does constructive notice turn on the plaintiff's individual experience of whether he or she saw?
No, I completely agree that it does not turn on plaintiff's knowledge. That's not the knowledge we're talking about. We're talking about defendant's knowledge. We're talking about Casey's knowledge here. But I think it's a critical piece of information establishing that at 11 minutes before his fall, it was not icy.
How do you get there? It's not clear to me that the record viewed in the light most favorable to appellant establishes that it was not icy 11 minutes before his fall.
His statement.
Help me understand.
Okay, I'll try and draw it out, and let me know if I'm, going off track. But in his statement, he says that the snow was changing. It took some time after removal to refreeze. When he got to Casey's, it had not developed that icy texture to it. When he exited the store 11 minutes later, it looked like glass. That's his statement, and he confirmed that during deposition.
What page of the deposition are you referring to?
Sure. So that is his statement on page 4, which is Doc ID 18, Exhibit 7. In his deposition, he says that the Casey's lot looked like it was plowed. It was crystallized snow left by a shear plow. I didn't see or feel any ice in the parking lot entering. The conditions that I walked in on ultimately were not the conditions that I walked out on. That's his deposition testimony.
So you're relying on his deposition testimony to conclude that there was no ice 11 minutes before the fall?
Yeah. Yes, Your Honor. I think that's the critical piece, the critical factual information in this case that differentiates it from, for instance, Mazelik, which is the case that that appellant really relies on heavily. And we're talking about direct evidence from appellant himself about the condition of the property 11 minutes before versus an inference trying to, which I believe at most creates a speculation about whether there was ice. And I think that's where you're left with the factual distinction in this case.
Why does there have to be ice? Why is ice the critical thing? I mean, I understand the complaint said I fell on ice. But, I mean, if the record contains evidence that compacted snow itself can be slippery, and if there is constructive notice of compacted snow in a heavily traveled area, why isn't that enough to serve as constructive notice that this is a dangerous condition?
Sure, Your Honor. And I don't believe that there is evidence that Casey's is aware that there is actually compacted snow at the property. And so whether you call it compacted snow or whether you call it ice, I don't believe the record establishes that there is a knowledge in any capacity by Casey's of that condition. We're talking about a condition of snow. If that's the condition, we have taken reasonable measures to address it. We're not on fulfillment of a duty at this point, though. We're on existence of a duty. So plowing snow versus a condition of ice, that there's no evidence in the record existed.
And why shouldn't Casey's have inspected after each plow?
I think, Your Honor, the real issue is getting back to existence of a duty, whether there's a duty to anticipate a condition or whether there's a duty once you have knowledge of a condition. And overarchingly, what appellant wants to do and is trying to do in this case is impose a foreseeability standard instead of knowledge at the existence of a duty stage. And that's just not what Minnesota precedent, longstanding precedent with seminal cases in the 1950s and 60s says.
Counsel for appellant stated that Casey's decision about how they were going to remove snow, we're going to plow, we're not going to come through and sand or salt or do anything else, that in essence created this dangerous condition. And so it takes us out of the need to even talk about constructive notice of the particular condition at this particular time.
Yes, Ron, and I see I'm out of time. I'll just take a brief moment to respond to the question. This is not a situation of Casey's creating a hazard. This is a winter event. I mean, it happened in April, but it's no doubt a winter snowstorm, which we, of course, get here in Minnesota. This is not an artificial discharge case. This is not gathering rain and putting it somewhere else where it freezes. There's no evidence of a freeze-thaw cycle even. This is strictly us trying to deal with a massive blizzard. So this is not Casey's created the condition case. This is not an artificial discharge. This is not, an actual, it's shoehorning into that because there's no constructive knowledge basis. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Ms. Olson, my question for you is if we were to agree with you and send this back, what questions would be on the special verdict form?
Thank you for giving me a moment to get set up here. Well, I think that would be something that we would have to discuss with the court. If there is a genuine issue of material fact underlying the duty question, that fact issue has to be resolved by the jury.
So what specifically would you ask the jury to answer?
I would ask the jury to answer whether Casey's had actual or constructive knowledge of the potentially dangerous condition in their parking lot, and then whether they acted reasonably with that knowledge with the typical duty questions. And to go to something Ms. Kinglin just said, she said, you know, without evidence of, you know, the precise piece of ice or that there was ice, there was no duty to do anything, but that's actually directly contradictory to the Almanson case that says landowners have a duty to inspect. It's not contingent upon notice of a particular thing. They have to be conducting reasonable inspections. And I think that when we're talking about the duty question here, once they have notice, as we discussed, that there's been a snow event, that their preferred method of treating that snow event does not treat all the snow, compacted snow and ice, that they see that condition in their parking lot, at a minimum, we have triggered a duty to inspect. And they're only relieved of their obligation if that inspection does not show a dangerous condition. Otherwise, under the law, they have to treat or warn of the dangerous condition.
Do we even get there if they don't have constructive knowledge of the, or actual knowledge of the dangerous condition?
It depends on how you're defining the dangerous condition. So, you know, Casey's has really tried to frame the question to the particular piece of ice Mr. Stengel fell on. That's inconsistent with Minnesota law. That would be like in the Red Owl case saying there was 99 banana peels on the floor that we knew about, but the plaintiff fell on the 100th one, so we're out. We didn't have notice of that one danger. What the law requires is if you look out and you see a condition that is likely to be dangerous to the patrons in highly trafficked areas, your duty to inspect is triggered. None of the case law says that if you look out and you see ice all over the parking lot, but you miss this piece, your duty to inspect is only here. So I think that's the issue that we're grappling with. If you look
at... Can you address respondent's argument that the ice must have formed in the 11 minutes while he was in the...
Yes, thank you. If you read Mr. Stengel's statement, he never says the conditions changed. That's Casey's word, changed. So what Casey's is asking you to do is look at Mr. Stengel's statement where repeatedly throughout the statement, he's telling Casey's insurance adjuster who called him 10 days after the fall and saying, look, you guys have a problem. You plowed this and it left this kind of soft, wet snow that freezes almost immediately after the plow leaves. And that caused me to fall, and you guys don't use salt and sand. That's the context of what he's saying. The plow created this condition. That's what we've been arguing all along. It's completely consistent with that. All Mr. Stengel says is he did not encounter snow and ice as he was entering the store, and when he came out, he slipped and fell on a piece of glass that was like ice, or a piece of ice that was like glass. Mr. Stengel did not take the same path, and to take Casey's argument on that, this court would have to violate the fundamental tenet of the summary judgment standard and say we're going to draw an inference from Mr. Stengel's statement that the ice formed in 11 minutes. That cannot be done at this stage of the case. They can argue it to the jury, but this court cannot look at the statement and say we will infer on that that the ice formed in the 11 minutes. In all of the cases where it's an ice case where the court finds summary judgment, the ice is isolated, it's on a stair, it's on a walkway that nobody had been through, and we say, look, nobody knew that it was there, and there's no evidence of when or how it formed, so summary judgment is appropriate.
What evidence would you point to from Casey's employees to show that they had knowledge that there was compacted snow? I mean, I think the cashier said it might have been slippery in spots. I don't know. So that doesn't sound very definitive. What other testimony would you point to?
Your Honor, I'm going to go over if I answer the question. May I?
May.
Thank you. A few things. I think that we have Ms. Motzko, who testified coming in that she saw snow. She knew where there was snow, there may be ice. And she knew that the plow compacted snow, making it more slippery. We have Ms. Kanatsi, who was the employee who looked out and said she knew there may be slippery spots. My argument is that alone is a duty to triggers the duty to inspect. But she did testify that when she looked out, she saw snowy conditions, and she also knew that Casey's was not doing anything to treat ice in its parking lot. Then I think we have some really important testimony from Casey's own management, where I asked them, so if the store employees are aware that there was snow, they were responsible to go out and make sure it was shoveled and sanded. Correct. Well, when the first snow falls, the plow, whoever the contractor comes in, they plow driveways, they shovel. But if there's anything that's necessary before they return to do another round, it's our responsibility. And I asked, and Casey's was aware in April of 18, that Mr. Soiny had a contract that he would only come out and plow if there was actual snow event required plowing. Yes. So you would agree if Casey's employees saw Mr. Soiny out there plowing, they were on notice that there was snow in the parking lot sufficient that it needed to be plowed. Yes. And Casey's was aware that besides plowing, Soiny was not doing anything to lay salt or sand. And so I ask in another part, so should Casey's employees, when they saw the plow, have gone out and inspected for dangerous conditions? And Casey's own representative said yes. So if that's not enough evidence to create actual or constructive knowledge in a snow and ice case, when the own defendant is saying we knew all of this information and we saw it with our own eyes, then I think that runs afoul with Minnesota Supreme Court's recent summary judgment law cases, where they are saying this court is not supposed to take these cases away from the jury. These fact questions need to go to a jury of the peers of the parties.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
The case was well briefed and well argued, and we'll have our decision out within 90 days.